You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 578. Let's go.
Hey, Batman!
Yes, Robin?
Is that the bat signal?
You're fucking right, it's a fucking bat signal!
The time is not up, the nuclear-powered Batmobile!
You're damn right, we're gonna start the fucking nuclear-powered Batmobile. I get the fuck out of Paris Freeze. Let's go!
To the Punk News Podcast, and right now it's just duo style, a combo attack. We got John G and we got M Moore. M Moore, what's happening?
Woo! It is cold. What?
It is cold. It is very cold. I guess it's probably even colder up in the snowy white north.
It is. That's all good. We're not under a frostbite advisory today, which is always really good. And now I'm kind of thinking about like Batman and Robin because he said duo, so that's all I'm thinking about.
Who's your preferred Batman? Like, what era, what medium? What's the best Batman?
Adam West is the best Batman.
Really?
Adam West is the best Batman. Who is your best Batman?
So I'm guessing you hate Batman then because you enjoy something that destructs and completely destroys the mythos of Batman and makes it something comical?
Adam West is just a gem.
I gotta go for Batman the Animated Series. I love Batman the Animated Series. It's like not kiddie, but it's not like sometimes in the comics they're like, oh, we're super dark now. It's like all right, Batman, how many underground sex clubs can you break up? You know, it's like I'm over it. Like for a hot minute, I don't really buy a whole lot of new comics these days. But I read a lot of comic books in the 90s, and then I read a lot of comic books again from like 2008 to like 2014 or so, or 2013, and that's when they had a Batman, like this, that was right before they rebooted Batman, and it was actually really good, except for it was like dark and serious, and they would constantly have like Batman like breaking up sex clubs and stuff. Like his villain was always some guy who was into like S&M and like ran a sex club. Like there was a guy called like Professor Pig who like ran a sex club, and then there was a guy that was like Batman's long lost brother or something that like ran a sex club. He's always busting up sex clubs. But really, there's more about Batman than it does about the villain when you think about it. So
anyway. Yeah, there's probably actual like crime going on. It's like, no, gotta go here.
Somebody's getting mugged outside. It's like, no, I gotta go bust up this sex club. Robin's like, Batman, you know what? Don't you really think we should stop the purse snatching? No, we gotta see what's going on in the sex club, Robin. And you come with me, you underage minor. Oh, Batman. I mean, we think about it, the whole Batman, not that we're the first to realize this, but, like, taking a minor into like, active shooting situations, pretty irresponsible, you know?
because it would go against, like, the, you know, he doesn't kill and stuff. But then, oh, my God, what the Robin that was killed by the Joker.
Jason Todd, that was one of the strongest things in comics ever, because it was really the first time a actual character died and the Joker killed him, which was messed up. But then they rebooted it and he didn't actually kill him, which completely defeats the entire like thing behind like one half of the Batman mythos. So I hate that fact. You know, friggin' reboots. Yeah. I hate reboots. Anyways, rebooting the year. It's 2022. And we have got a lot of news to cover. I don't know if we're going to get through it all. We forgot to have our pre-show quick meeting to decide what we actually want to talk about. So do you want to cover – I mean, we've got usually we hit between 6 to 8 stories an episode. Right now, I've got 14 stories on the docket, and that doesn't even cover Neil Young. That doesn't even cover Muddy Muddy Boston's breaking up. There was a lot of news the past week. And so, do you want to hit all 17 news stories? Should we just hit some and then not get the others? What do you want to do?
I say we go for it and see where we run out of steam. Like, see if we can do all of it.
All right. Well, listen, so we're not going to do news this week. We'll do news next week. Mail, we're not going to do this week. We got some in the docket, so we will get to it, but we're going to skip that now because we got so much news. Top of the news this week, Taylor Swift is now the Record Store Day 2022 ambassador. Every year, Record Store Day has an ambassador. Dave Grohl was one year. Chuck D was one year. Belinda Carlisle, I think, was one year. And it's basically the person that acts as the spokesperson for Record Store Day and says why people should go to Record Store Day and basically is the face of Record Store Day for the year. Taylor Swift is Record Store Day person this year, and it was very divisive in the punk scene. And by very divisive, I mean it was almost unanimous disapproval. Emor, I'm just going to kick this one off because I've got very strong feelings about this. But before I kick it off, I'm going to tell a little bit of a parable. So in the 30s, 40s, and the 50s, there really weren't things in record stores. People would buy records at the hardware store of all places and sometimes furniture stores. The reason it was at the hardware store because hardware stores were kind of like general stores, so they would just have general merchandise. Then eventually records kind of got moved over to department stores. And then around in the 60s, when like the Beatles, with the British invasion, record stores began to open because they became a thing that people – not only collect, I mean, people collected records starting in like your 30s or even 20s, but record stores became hubs of what's happening the 60s. Honestly, the invention of rock and roll, Chuck Berry and Elvis, was really when music kind of became a youth thing or a new wave of culture thing. Before then, a lot of music was either classical or big band, and so it was something everybody did, and it didn't really represent any sort of cultural change. Whereas with the British invasion, and I realize this is kind of oversimplifying things, but it is true to a degree. With the British invasion, record stores became a thing, and music became a hub of cultural change and kind of a representative of how the culture was moving along, much more then than it is now, frankly. And so record stores kind of in the 60s and 70s and 80s, record stores were happening places. Think of all the first wave and early punk bands and other bands. You know, Black Flag, they met, you know, Greg Ginn and Keith Morse met at a record store. Record stores were places where people would go, have fun, hang out, buy records, play records, and even have, you know, kind of performances there. Not as much now, but record stores were kind of a thing. Then after, you know, the 80s, when, you know, big box stores started becoming a thing, like Tower Records, Tower Records, FYE, The Wall, Coconuts, Sam Goody. Record stores kind of became more corporate, if you will, and kind of less of a place to hang out and more place to buy records. And then once places like Best Buy and Walmart became huge and people bought their CDs, not their records, the record store became a very sad place. Enmore is too young for this. But I remember going into Gold Million Records in Ardmore and in the mid-90s, in the mid-90s to early 2000s, record places, you know, now record stores are fun happening places. There's people there. It's cool to go to the record store now. But in the mid to late 90s to the early 2000s, record stores were tombs of misery. There was, an old guy working behind the counter, and he was just a curmudgeon. And you couldn't ever figure out, like, why he was even running a record store because he seemed to hate everyone and really not even to like music. And you would go in to buy a record, and he would treat you like shit. And you're thinking, doesn't this guy want my money? I would go into Gold Million Records, and I would pull up Beatles Yesterday and Today, and the guy would yell at me, "It's not a butcher press." Like he would yell at you, because you're looking at the record, and you're like, "I know, I'm just looking at the record, man." Or I would go to Mad Platter in Westchester, and the guy, you take your CDs to the counter, and the guy would like kind of stare at you and scowl and like ring you out and go like, 1924, or 1937, or, 798. He'd be like pissed off that you're buying CDs from him, which I could never understand. Or I would go to City Lights in State College, and I took my Dead Kennedys CD to the counter, and the guy would scowl at me because I'm 18 or 19, I should already have a Dead Kennedy CD. And man, I mean, honestly, and the only people going to the record stores those days mostly were middle-aged or late middle-aged dudes that were collecting folk and maybe prog and psych, you know, and Beatles. And it was a miserable place, and it was downcast. And it was even though there's music playing, it's quiet. Everyone's miserable in there. Things are overpriced, and it sucks, right? But thanks to punk and some other genres and hip-hop and dance, starting, you know, around 2005, 2006, 2007, records started to come back again. And people kind of forgot, and I think people have forgotten, that the stereotype of record stores is they used to be kind of miserable places run by miserable owners who were dicks to you. But then, you know, once records started to become popular again, people of all ages came in. People, you know, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 30, 40, 50, you know, record stores are kind of popular again. Plus, more and more people are bringing in records to flip, you know. So, you know, instead of, you know, the same old Kinks record that's been sitting there for 37 years, it's Black Flag records, Ramones records, Elton John, all kinds of things. Record stores, there's young people, there's old people, there's guys, there's girls, there's all kinds of people in the record store. And now when you go to a record store, it's a very pleasant place to go, especially on a Friday or Saturday or Sunday. People are there. They're having fun. The music's playing. People are talking. People are talking about records. And for the most part, record stores are really fun places again. And you say, why? Why are record stores more fun than they used to be? The answer is because it's not a place for one kind of miserable old guy anymore. It's where when everybody can come to the party's a lot more varied, and party's a lot more fun. There's way more ideas, and there's way more energy, and plus it's a happening place again. So the reason the record store is a popping place once again is because we got the 14-year-old girls coming in to buy Tapestry, which is fine. We got the 14-year-old girls coming in to buy Fleetwood Mac. We got the 16-year-old boys coming in to buy Mac Miller or what's the guy with the tattoos on his face? And he's like a soul singer, but he's terrible. Post Malone, you know, and, you know, it's not my pick, but, you know, that keeps the energy coming. You know, that's what makes a place happening, and that is it is a place of new ideas. That's why the record store, again, is a cool place. It's a place, it's an archive. We got Fleetwood Mac, which is fine. I mean, not my favorite band, but, you know, it's a good band. And we've got the new stuff. Even if I don't like all of it, you know, you have to take the chaff with the wheat. You can't just have, you know, diamonds, you know. And you know, I mean, back in the day, I bought George Thorogood records. George Thorogood's terrible. But if I didn't buy George Thorogood records, I probably never would have made my way to Queen, and I never would have made my way to the Ramones. And so the fact is the record store now is a popping place because everybody can come in and everybody can have fun, and there's no entry. The guy at the counter isn't going to be a dick to you because the guy at the counter isn't there anymore. It's either a young person or a college-age person, or it's kind of a hip dude that's been selling records for a while, and, you know, he's there to have fun and sell records. You know, the miserable old man that made you feel bad for buying a Dead Kennedys record is gone, thankfully. And that's where the record store is popping right now. And so that's kind of the preamble to my Taylor Swift thing. People are criticizing Taylor Swift as the ambassador of Record Store Day because they're saying Taylor Swift and Adele and so-and-so, they're blocking up the vinyl supply chain so small records and punk bands can't get their stuff pressed. And it's all Taylor Swift's fault. It's all Adele's fault. It's all, you know, Beyonce's fault. But, you know, first of all, I would say, and more, if it was Bruce Springsteen who was clogging up the clogging up the channels and was the face, would they say, we hate Bruce Springsteen? Or would they say, oh, that's kind of cool? Or if it was Eddie Vedder, would they say, we hate Eddie Vedder? Or would they say, oh, that's kind of cool? What would they say?
Oh, they'd hail both of them as heroes and be like, I've loved this man my whole life.
So if both Bruce Springsteen sells a lot of records and Taylor Swift sells a lot of records, and they're both eligible to be heads of Record Store Day, what's the one difference between Bruce Springsteen and Taylor Swift? There's only one difference. It's that Taylor Swift's a girl. There is definitely a huge anti-woman vibe. And I know I talk about, you know, I'm not trying to be Mr. White Knight or Mr. But I mean, this is the truth. And I'm not trying to be Mr. Oh, I'm so sophisticated. But, I mean, it's the truth. The only reason they hate Taylor is because she's a girl. And that's the truth, right? But that's not even part of it. People are seeing Taylor as the destruction of the record store. Taylor's blocking the supply chain. It's all Taylor's fault. It's all Adele's fault. People are fools, and I'll tell you why. Taylor is not the destroyer of the record industry. Taylor is the savior of the record company and the record industry. And when I say record, I mean literal physical vinyl records. Adele is the savior of the vinyl industry, and here's why. And I've talked about this before. you know, a little rinky-dink 300-unit pop punk band, those bands aren't keeping record plants running. You know, 300 pop punk records is not going to keep a multi-million dollar structure operating that costs thousands and thousands of dollars a day to operate. You know, even Hot Water Music selling 5,000 copies is not going to keep a record pressing plant moving. However, Taylor selling a million records this year, Adele selling a million records this year, that's what's keeping the record plants pressing. And I understand that people will say stuff like, well, so yes, you're saying Taylor's got a stranglehold, so it's hurting the rest of us. But a big part of it is the stranglehold is, you know, the music consumer's fault to begin with. Is when we used to have more American record pressing plants and there was a check pressing plant that was $2 cheaper, everyone said, let's go to the check record pressing plant. And that drove several American large pressing plants out of business. Now, the check plant isn't $2 cheaper anymore. It's more expensive than the American one used to be. And they sound like crap. And I know they sound like crap because I got one of those check records the other day. So the whole reason we're in this scenario to begin with isn't because Taylor took away Hot Water Music ability to press records, because you, the consumer, said, I want a $2 cheaper record rather than one that's made here by a plant in America that's been here for 60 years that makes great sounding quality records. But that's fine. We're not at the end game yet. And Taylor is here to save you, because right now records are more popular than they've been in the past 30 years, right? Records are huge right now, huge. And so here's the question. Are records a fad like Beanie Babies and it's going to pop next year, the year after? Or are records truly here to stay? And in my heart, I feel like it's a fad. I feel like people just want records now and people will get tired of it, you know, and it'll all go back to normal. But maybe I'm wrong. And I hope I'm wrong. And here's why. Records don't even have to exist. Records didn't really exist in the 10s and 20s. In the 30s and 40s, that's when people said, oh, well, records are something we can buy. And people decided that instead of just listening to music on the radio and instead of listening to, you know, people playing guitar like on the porch, they want to buy records. So maybe we are in an era where people actually want physical media and they do want records. And that's going to last another 60 or 70 years. Hopefully that's the truth, right? How do we make the record buzz go from being a buzz and a fad to something permanent? You don't do it by having Hot Water Music sell 5,000 records. And I'm not dissing Hot Water Music. You do it by getting Taylor Swift, by getting Adele. You do it by getting Joe Jonas. You do it by getting BTS to get the kids 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 buying records. You make buying records a fun thing. You make it a 17-year-old can come into the record store and say, I want the new Billie Eilish record. And the record store says, right there, a lot of people love Billie Eilish. That's a cool record. You know, you implement the groundwork in that, you know, this is not a fad that we're all going to talk about this year and then drop next year. It's something that is worthwhile doing and is a fun thing to do for the rest of your life, you know, for years and years and years. It's a fun thing to collect. Just like people collect – I don't really know what people collect. I mean, I was going to say baseball cards, but don't collect baseball cards. But just like people collect NFTs, people can collect – you know, instill the idea that collecting records is fun, but also that music has value, and that's why a record is $20 or $25 or $30, because the artist is getting paid. You are getting a thing that will last a long, long time. It's fun to look at. It's even more fun to listen to. We are forming habits and saying that, yes, the record industry was on its last gasp, and we are suddenly getting a boom. The record, 2002, records were dying. It was the end. Now records are back. And the reason records are back is because the young people are buying Taylor Swift and Adele. The young people are saving records, not destroying it. I mean, so if we can get the young people to want to collect records for a long time, that means the punk rockers will bear that benefit as well, and that the record plants will stay open. Maybe more record plants will stay open because the demand is so high. And you can say, well, John, sure, the demand's high, but the punk bands who have been there since the start can't get the records pressed. But and I do have sympathy for the small labels and the small, you know, the small bands that are having trouble getting records pressed. But we're punk rockers, right? So if we're punk rockers, we're anti-capitalist. And we say, well, the USPS, the museum, those things don't make money, but we want to keep those things existing because we like them, because they provide a good service, or because it's educational, like the museum. So I understand that small record labels are having problems right now, and that's a bummer. So while the record boom is happening and while the market is adjusting to build more record pressing plants and the distribution is increasing, why that industry is figuring itself out, which if records are not a fad and records are here to say it will do, then we do the non-capitalistic thing and we say, Mike Park, I know it's going to be 9 months for Classes of Love to come out, but I want to pay you $25 now, and in 9 months I'll get a cool little surprise in the mail, the Classes of Love record. That way, Mike Park, you don't have to worry about paying, you know, a lot of money and waiting 9 months before seeing the return on your dollar. We say, Jello, I know you got some cool reissues coming out in a year, in 9 months. I know you've got a choke on the supply chain, but that's cool. I'll pay just a little bit now, $30 now, which is no skin off my back, or you know, not that big of a burden. And if we all put in $30 to get the cool reissue coming out next year, then the massive worry that Alternative Tentacles has, a $10, $20, $30,000, isn't a massive worry because it's already paid. That is, if each of us just chips in a little, it removes a huge burden from the labels that are trying to do cool stuff. We say, you know, Andy Pohl and at Save the Heart Records. We say, Andy, I know you got some mystery record coming out. Let me pay you now my $15, $20. I don't have to worry about $20, and that way you, a smaller record label, can put out cool stuff and not worry that it's going to bankrupt you personally. So this is punk rock. It's not capitalism, right? So if we all chip in and help out the art will survive. And then eventually, if Taylor Swift, if Adele is able to get the kids to say, we want records going forward. We always want records. We want records for the next 20, 10, 30 years. If that happens, then in the meantime, while we're all helping out Mike Park and Jello and Andy Pohl at Save the Heart Records, then in the meantime, the industry will adjust and there'll be more record pressing plants and we'll be back to the new normal, which will be records are very popular again. And everybody gets records and there's enough pressing plants to print all the demand of the records because it is a profitable industry. So when Taylor Swift sells millions of records, the answer is, I don't want Taylor Swift here. I just want my friends that are all look exactly like me. We're all 40 years old and we all have beards and we all wear hoodies and shorts and have calf tattoos. That's the only people I want to collect records. I want everyone to be just like me. We say, no, bring in the youth because the youth are what drives the markets. Bring in anybody that wants to, you know, enjoy records because for years and years and years, you all were saying records are better than CDs. CDs sound like shit. Okay, you've won the battle. People want records. They don't want CDs. So we're on the cusp of winning. The only bridge left to cross is it a fad or is it a permanent thing? And if we can get Taylor and Adele to make records a permanent thing, that means the market will adjust itself and you and I will have records by Off, by Circle Jerks, by Lotion, by Crazy in the Brains, by No Bro in 10 years from now, 20 years from now, because without Adele keeping the record, without Taylor Swift keeping the record plants in business, they're going to close up because they're not making any money. And then 10 years from now, 15 years from now, none of us get records. Or if we do, they're going to be $60 each because it's one guy making a record in the Czech Republic. And that's his plan. So what people are failing to realize is that Taylor Swift isn't your destroyer. She's your savior. Taylor Swift is the person that is ideal to be the record store day masthead or figurehead because she's saying to the young people, let's all go to the record store and get the record store some money. Let's all press records and get the pressing plants some money. And that groundwork is what us punk rockers will be able to use for years on out. So all I have to say is Taylor Est, Salutor Corporis Musici, Taylor Bellica Regina Artis, Novum Ferret Atetem Astamade Artis S Artifice, Victoria S. Taylor, Ave Taylor, Ave, Ave Taylor, Ave, Taylor Invictus, Taylor Invictus, Taylor Invictus. Emma, what do you think?
not breaking out the Latin yet, but I agree 100%. Like, if it wasn't for Taylor Swift and Adele, like, there wouldn't be the vinyl boom that there is now. And... you know, like people just kind of shitting on her because she's a pop artist and because she's a woman and because of all this kind of stuff. And, you know, because she has young fans and whatever. It's like, oh, would you like, you know, the industry to die out with you? You know, like you don't want to pass it to somebody else. You don't want to like keep it going. There's been like with the whole teenage and young fan thing, like the Beatles were dismissed, right? Because it was like, oh, only like, you know, the Beatlemania thing, like, oh, you know, teenage girls and women like them, so no, you know, that they can't be good or whatever. And now they're what, like the most influential band of all time, or one of the most influential bands of all time. So, you know, there's a lot of power in the youth, and there's a lot of power in people who can rally the youth and really make a change in an industry or revitalize an industry. One thing I really liked with Taylor Swift was she put out a statement, and in her statement, she kept talking about like going to independent record stores and supporting small businesses and how like they've had such a rough time. So like go out and support them and everything. So I really hope that with the power that she has, people listen to that, and a lot more people go to local record stores, and a lot more people support the industry. Like I don't collect records, but I love going in because they usually have CDs, and it's such a nice environment, and it's so cool, and it's so interesting, and it's such a, like, you go in with one thing, like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go get the like the new No Bro record, and then the next thing you know, you're like in a completely different section looking at like old jazz, you know what I mean? Like you've gone completely off, you found something else, you have what you want, but you're also like exploring and everything. You know, and I think that we all started off with some like pop music as our base before branching out to punk or branching out to rock or branching out to metal. You know, like that's what it is at its essence. So Taylor Swift, all for ya.
Yeah, honestly, like Taylor Swift is pretty rad. I mean, I've never even listened to a full Taylor Swift album, which I really should. I generally like the stuff I heard, like, you know, at the gas station or whatever. But Taylor Swift is really rad in that, like, when she puts out her CDs, she signs, like, thousands and thousands of copies that only go to independent record stores. That's pretty rad, you know? Or like when they try, she re-recorded all her tracks to screw over the people that were messing with her own catalog, which is cool, you know. And she did one of the really cool. Yeah. Oh, she pulled stuff off Spotify because Spotify wasn't doing fair payments, and I mean, Spotify is pretty shitty. But Taylor basically made Spotify pay artists a higher rate to a degree because they pay so low. So Taylor's pretty rad, you know. So there's only one reason why people are dissing on her in the punk community. And honestly, the punk should be above this, and it's not yet. We'll see. And more No Bro, they're putting out a new EP. Tell us about it. And a new song. Tell us about it.
So, No Bro, they are from Montreal. They are a punk band, and they are great. So they are releasing a new EP, and the EP is called Live Your Truth, Shred Some Gnar, which is one of the best names. And that's going to be out February 23rd via Dine Alone Records and Big Scary Monsters. So it has 7 songs, and Better Each Day and Julia, their 2 previous singles, are going to be on it. And they just released their new single, which is Bye Bye Baby. So the song is sung by guitarist Caroline Carboneau. And she does a really, really good job. There's a lot of emotion in the lyrics and in the vocal delivery, and there's parts where she just lets loose and just like screams kind of, and those are perfect. They're just a pure expression of like, you know, rage, what the song's about, and it's just great. Like something like really strong with the song was she was going through a really bad breakup, and the lead singer Catherine was like, oh yeah, go, you know, you got to sing this song, you have to get all this like this shit out. So I thought that was kind of interesting too, and just adds another layer to it. So the song, like it's a little more like, it's not as polished as A Better Each Day, like it's a little more fuzzy, it's a little more garagey, and I love it. It's great. The song, I listened to all the 3 like release songs in the order that they're on right now, and they flow really well together. They also switch between French and English in the song, which is really awesome. And it just, it's really neat because it's like, oh, how good's my French? How much do I remember? Not a lot, but a little bit. So that's always kind of neat to see. But yeah, like each song really so far has a different feel, and that gives me hope for the album because, you know, like it's always cool to hear variety, you know, even if it's a little bit. So like I really hope that this is No Bros' year because they're just, they have so much, you know, so much going on. John, what did you think of No Bro?
I got to say, M1, No Bro is a winner. I mean, this band rocks. Yeah. At times, it kind of feels like the Spits to me, or maybe sometimes like Jay Reitard. I just love how it rips it fast. It rocks. It's relatively – it's not lo-fi, but it's got like the lo-fi energy, but it's actually hi-fi recording, which is like the best way to do it. So, yeah, No Bro is an awesome band. They're – I dig how they rock, and I dig how it's super energetic, and I dig the lyrics, and I dig everything about them. I think this band is definitely a winner, and so let's play some No Bro right now, and because this band kicks ass, and this is an M4, and you can thank M4 for getting people hyped to this band. So this is No Bro, and we'll be right back, bro. I love that name, No Bro. the Queers and the Dwarves are going on tour. It's a somewhat extended tour. The Jasons are opening. For me, the important thing is that the Dwarves are doing – it's the 25th anniversary of The Dwarves Are Young and Good Looking, one of the band's many masterpiece albums. It is – I mean, it's their pop punk album, but it's not really pop punk. It's really just straight up punk with a kind of catchy – beat to it. So I'm going to go to at least one show, but I'll probably go to like three or four. I'm definitely going to go to Ben Salem. I'm almost definitely going to go to Baltimore. I might go to Asbury Park, and I might even go to I think there's one other show that I might even go to. Maybe Harrisburg. So I'm psyched that they're doing like a million shows right like with Robbie's in my house. Dwarves Are Young, Good Looking is an absolute masterpiece. It's where Black Dahlia decided to see how closely he could stick to the how much he could master, you know, classic 50s songwriting like Ritchie Valens or the Big Bopper. or Freddie Cannon, and I am super. The band is as good. I saw them at Punk Rock Bowling. They killed it. And so I can't wait to see them do one of their many masterpieces all the way through. Although that album's only like 25 minutes long, so I wonder if they'll do extra stuff or so live that would be like 20 minutes. So I hope that they do extra stuff. So I am extremely psyched for this tour. And it's gonna be rad. Also, the Doors and the Queers toured together maybe it was like 5 or 6 years ago, and at the end they did like a 4 or 5 song mini set where they did like a Ramones set at the end, both bands, which was very cool. So I'm psyched for this. And more, Dwarves and the Queers, are you a fan or not a fan, bro?
Bro, I've never been able to get into either one of them.
You're wrong.
I don't know what it is.
Listen to the Dwarves, Young and Good-Looking, fantastic record. Here's another record. And more, I forget, are you a Gwar fan or not really? I know you're a metal fan, but maybe Gwar might be too silly for you. What's your stance on Gwar?
I really want to see Gwar live because my friend went and saw them and showed me a while ago and showed me videos or sent me videos of it, and they look absolutely nuts. I've listened to like a couple songs, but I haven't like really dove in, but I've been meaning to, so that's something I'm going to be doing soon.
So it looks
like a blast.
Gwar's got a new record coming out. It's called The New Dark Ages, and it's coupled with a graphic novel called Gwar and the Duoverse of Absurdity. It's the second album without Dave Brock, who of course died about 7 or 8 years ago now, sadly. I will say when Gwar's initial post-Brocky stuff was a little rocky. The last album, Blood of the Gods, was okay. I didn't love it. I like some of it. I didn't love it, but I've seen them about 4 times post-Brocky. I mean, overall, I've seen them probably about 25 times or so. But post-Brock, I've seen them about 4 times. I most recently saw them only about 3 months ago for the I guess it was 25th anniversary of Scum Dogs of the Universe. Would it be 25 or no, 30? 30. 30? 30? That's crazy. Or is it 20? 91, 2001. Wow. 30 years since Scum Dogs of the Universe. Wow. Anyway, that tour was amazing. Lead singer Blothar is getting better and better. So I'm excited for this record. They're never going to – well, I hate to say this, but they're probably never going to hit the heights of Brocky era again. But what I saw was real good. And it is tough just dealing with the fact that Brocky's gone because he was such an integral part of the band. But the rest of the band is all stepping up. I feel it's more of a collective now maybe. And so I'm very excited to hear this record, and I think it's going to be real good. Also, Blothar is getting better and better at singing. so I'm psyched. I'm psyched. I guess you're excited to see him, but you don't know about the record, so we'll see, right?
Yeah, but it's cool that they're doing like a graphic novel with it. Like, I love when bands do stuff like that, especially like bands like with Gwar. Like, they have so much lore and so much like with them. Like, that's going to be really, really neat.
Back in the day, there's about 12 or 10 Gwar comics, and I wish I had bought them back in the day because now they're like $80 each. So I guess they're bringing back, I guess, the more comic book aspect of Gwar. In the early 2000s, they kind of put that side away because they were getting too goofy, so they kind of wanted to be more serious. But now that I guess they've reestablished themselves, they feel more comfortable with the sillier stuff, which is cool, which is fine. Here's some more breaking news. So Circle Jerks are re-releasing Wild in the Streets, their classic second album. That's out on Trust Records, just like the initial reissue of their first album, Group Sex. The new Wild in the Streets is remastered from the original master tapes, so we're going to talk about that in a second. But it also comes with 3 live tracks and a 20-page deluxe booklet. The booklet that came with Group Sex is real cool, so I'm sure this booklet will be really good as well. What's interesting about this is the version that most people have heard of Wild in the Streets is not really the real version. So the Circle Jerks, the initial press of Wild in the Streets from 1982 had a mix. Then Frontier Records re-released the record in 1988, and at the time, the master tapes could not be found. So they remixed the entire album, and that's the version most people have heard. And most people's, I don't want to say complaints because Wild on the Streets is an excellent album, but some people think the sound sounds a little 80s, a little canned. That's because that's the 80s. Was not a remix remaster, I guess. This new version is And you there?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, this new version is the original. I guess they found the original tapes. It's the original tapes remastered and remixed, I guess. So it's going to be, I guess, more faithful to the original mix and not the second mix, which is fairly radically different. So I'm psyched for this. I mean, it's a classic album. The album is great. I'm psyched for it. And we'll know if it's the true original mix because on the track, I'm going to look it up in a second. Famously, in the new mix, there was a typewriter in the track that was removed because they didn't have that tape. So you can always tell that's the second mix. The typewriter isn't on the song. It's about the defamation innuendo. The original mix has the typewriter like clacking away in it because it's supposed to be music journalists talking about the band and Keith making fun of the music journalists. So I'm excited. I'm sure it's going to be great. I'm glad that this seminal record is getting a deluxe reissue. And more, are you familiar with Wild in the Streets Mix 1 or Mix 2? Or do you hate Keith Morse for the Burning Passion?
I think I'm more familiar with the wrong mix.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when stuff like this comes out, it's always really cool because it's like, this is how they wanted it to sound, you know? And to make that more widely available, like, that'd be really cool. And to have something that they can actually, like, stand behind, because they don't play that live that much, do they? Or what's the deal with that?
The deal with what?
Like, they don't play a lot of Wild in the stuff from Wild in the Streets live.
Oh, I don't know about
that. Do
let's go down. You know, I never really thought about it. Let's go down the list. They definitely play the song Wild in the Streets a lot, but let's listen real quickly. What is cool, the original mix sounds much closer to the sound of the first one. It's kind of like springier, flightier, more high energy. But let's take a quick look at the track list. So they definitely play Wild in the Streets. Leave Me Alone, they don't really play. Stars and Stripes, they play once in a while. 86, they play a lot. Meet the Press. I meant Meet the Press, not Defamation Innuendo. Right, they don't play that one that much. Trap, they play. Murder of the Disturbed and Letter Bomb, they play those. Question Authority, they play them. Defamation, they don't play. Moral Majority, they play. Forced Labor, Political Stew, Just Like Me, they don't really play. But they do play the I get to play about four songs from it. It will be interesting if on the tour they play a lot from it. I hope they do all of group sets again like they were doing, because that's what I really want to see. That'd be
so cool.
All right, so let's see. And Circle Jerk's got a huge tour coming up. So.
And they're going to Toronto.
Are you going to go?
I want to, so I will see.
You should go. And how many kids really didn't see the Circle Jerks? And you need to go see the Circle Jerks. Circle Jerks. I saw the punk rock blowing. They're still amazing. Speaking of a guy that's still amazing in a band, John Hinckley Jr. starting a new band. And of course, the listeners probably know John Hinckley Jr. was convicted of trying to assassinate President Ronald Reagan in an effort to impress Jodie Foster. It didn't work. And so John Hinckley got out of jail in 2016. And on his Twitter, he said, "I'm starting a band. I'm looking for a bass player, drummer, and lead guitarist. If you would like to be in my band and are serious about this, send the bio to P.O. Box, blah, 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 in Virginia." So we got some flack in the comments section for, you know, you're making fun of someone with mental illness. No, we're not making fun of someone with mental illness. We're not making fun of anybody in this article. We're saying John Hinckley Jr.'s got a band like he posted about publicly. The John Hinckley Jr. story has inspired many punk songs, including World Inferno's Secret Service Fighting USA and Suicide Tendencies' I Shot the Devil, which is actually I Shot the Reagan. Is I Shot Reagan? Yeah, I guess I Shot Reagan. I Shot President Reagan. And more, do you know the story behind World Inferno's Secret Service Fighting USA?
I do not. What is the story?
So, I'm going to tell this real quick. And actually, in my article, Jack Terrycloth Has a Cough, we detailed the story in depth. So Jack Terrycloth, before he was Jack Terrycloth, was Pietro Ventantonio. And in high school, he used to go to the library during lunch because he got beat up a lot. And he would prank call people from the library. And so one day he called up the phone operator and he said, "I'm going to shoot President Reagan." And what he didn't know is that President Reagan was doing a speech one town over. He goes home and he's laughing. There was some kind of news report or something. And then the next day in the library, his friends and him are photocopying the news story about the threat. And if you look at the original press of World Inferno is Just the Best Party, that article is on the inside of the CD case. So his friends are laughing, but they left the article in the photocopy machine. So him and all his friends got called into the principal's office. And no, do I have the story wrong? No, that's right. And they all denied it except for one kid. And they don't know the kid that denied it. They said, this is going to go in your permanent record if you don't rat somebody out. And none of them ratted somebody out, or so they thought. Jack Terrycloth goes home, and the Secret Service storms into his house. They run into the house while his dad's there, grab him, and his dad's like, you can't take him. You know, he didn't do anything. They take him to down to the police station. The Secret Service interrogates him. They realize he's just a knucklehead kid, and he winds up getting probation. But he could have been charged with trying to assassinate a U.S. president.
Holy shit.
So anyway, and more. The John Hinckley Jr. News story. Would you want to join his band? And was it in poor taste for us to post the story?
I don't think I'd join his band. I mean, I'm sure he's doing better now. And hopefully, you know, was it on the... has good people around him. I don't think it was in poor taste to post the story. I think because it's news. Like this man is part of the wider cultural narrative. Like, you know, people know who he is. And again, there's been lots of punk songs written like with him in mind or like with his title. Like there's the Free John Free John Hinckley propaganda song. There's lots of stuff that way. So people are aware of him. He's been musically active for years. Because he has his own YouTube and he has lots of stuff that way. And I think I saw something where it said he was going to release an album in 2022. Or it was on one of his posts. Maybe that's what this is for. Maybe he needs a band to record the album. I don't think it's making fun of anyone. It's stating the facts.
Punks are just funny duddies these days. It's punk rock. It's not the 1990s zone, you know what I mean? People are pissed. Anyways, I think it's funny that John Hinckley's starting a band, and I'll listen to his music if he puts anything out. I don't think it'll be very good, but who knows? And if John Hinckley like put out like the best song ever, the best album ever, would you like check it out? Would you go see him live?
I'd check it out. I don't know if I'd see him live.
What if like John Hinckley like it's like real good and he gets a publicist and the publicist says, "And more, we want you to come to the show and interview John Hinckley." Would you do it?
Why not? At that point, why not?
What if John Hinckley's like, "Oh, and more, you know, working along real well. Let's go drive by the White House together."
I pulled out. I have a phobia of cars. I need to leave now.
So what if he's like, "Well, let's go on tandem bicycle."
I broke my foot. I'm sorry.
What if he's like, I'll do all the pedaling. You can just sit there.
I'm sure he
really wants to go on a bike ride with you past the White House. Anyways, oh, speaking of taking the pass, Hot Water Music, they got a new song out. It's called Collect Your Things and Run. And the punk community was very divided on this. Some people thought it was like their best song ever, and some people thought it was crappy. And more, what did you think of the new Hot Water Music song, Collect Your Things and Run? And I got a vague idea of your taste. Do you like Hot Water Music or do you not really care?
I really liked their Killing Time song, like the first single off of that, off of their upcoming album. And that's the first time I listened to them. And then I meant to listen to them because on the podcast that we talked about that, I asked Hallie and Sam where to start with them. So they gave me an album, so I wrote it down. And then I completely forgot about it. So this is the second time I've listened to them, you know. So I haven't listened to them enough to say, yeah, I'm a fan or I'm not yet. It's just, like, they're interesting. This song didn't really grab me. Like, it's a good song. It's catchy and stuff. But I like the first song more. I don't know if I'm gonna check out the album. I think I probably will, but this one didn't really do it for me. The video was nuts, though. I love the video. The video kicks ass. The video's all like skateboarders, and there's professional skateboarders, and the band's on skateboards at one point, and everyone just looks like they're having a lot of fun, and you know, there's pro shot stuff, and like skate videos are just great in general. And they film different cities. Like there's Toronto, there's Gainesville, there's Grass Valley and Santa Cruz. So those are pretty neat. So I'd want to be part of the video, you know, like everyone in the video seems like they'd be fun to hang out with. And like it would be an interesting experience. And I really want to try skateboarding. Like I want to try skateboarding so badly. So yay skateboarding. Song. John, you don't really like Hot Water Music, or what's your?
I just don't get it, man. It does nothing for me at all. I'm like, I would like someone to explain to me what it is about Hot Water Music that moves their soul. I just think it's mid-tempo radio rock. I don't know. I mean, everyone loves it except me. I don't know what to tell you. But listen, there's something that I do love. Christian of Mean Gene is putting out a new record. It's a solo record. It is called Funky Punks in Space. And at Punk News, we broke the news, and we had a short interview with Christian about it. I wish we were able to debut a song, but it looks like that song is going to be debuted next week. Enmore, you haven't heard this record, but if you like Mean Jeans, this record is fantastic. I've heard the record, and I hate being the guy that says, oh, I heard the record already. But this record is it is Mean Jeans meets 80s, like dance. Like Mean Jeans meet New Order, or Mean Jeans meet Dead or Alive. Or Mean Jeans meets 80s club music, you know, like post-punk dance music. You know, everyone knows what New Order and Dead or Alive sound like. It's Mean Jeans in that. That's what it is. And it is it's some of Christian's strongest songwriting to date. I'm amazed at, like, Mean Jeans doesn't get enough credit for, like, how many cool spin-off projects they have. There's this now. There's Funky Punks in Space. But there's also Hound of Love, which is fantastic. There's Patsy's Rats. There's another band. Plus, Mean Jeans had the Jingles record, which everyone hated except for me, thereby proving that I'm more sophisticated than everyone, because that record is genius and great. I think Mean Jeans just – everyone thinks that Mean Jeans is just a funny Ramones core band, but they're such – just like the Ramones, there's so much more intelligence and fun there that I feel like a lot of people don't get. I hope they get that with this record. I dug this record. I think it's great. Emma, are you a fan of Mean Jeans at all, or are you excited to check this out, or is Ramones core overdone and not your thing?
I don't mind the odd Ramones core album. I do like Mean Jeans. Mean Jeans are good. The interview is really interesting. It really piqued my interest because it's like, mentioned space and like aliens and, you know, like all that kind of stuff. But like space, but in a larger context. But, you know, like kind of more personal and all this kind of stuff. And I love stuff like that. Like that stuff's really cool. So I'm excited to check it out because I'm intrigued and I want to know what it sounds like. And, New Order is great. So. Mean Jeans and New Order would just be awesome.
I know you're a New Order fan. What's your favorite New Order album? I love New Order. Oh, that's right. You want to go to Peter Hook when he comes around. What's your favorite New Order
Hopefully.
Album?
Hopefully. Oh, I don't know.
What blew my mind about New Order is before I heard New Order albums, I thought every song was like a dance song. But if you listen to like the first three albums, they're actually more like Joy Division albums. The singles are like danceable, but the singles aren't on the album, which is kind of cool. And the albums are way heavier, especially the first two than you think they're going to be. And more, what do you like better, New Order or Joy Division?
I like Joy Division better, but me too. I really like New Order.
I agree 100%. Here's something surprising. I saw some of the Peter Hook does all Joy Division and then all New Order sets. What do you think more people wanted to hear?
I'm going to go with New Order because you can kind of dance to it a bit better.
I thought Joy Division was the way bigger band than New Order, but that's not true at all. New Order is like the way bigger band. Like I thought it was Joy Division because you see people wearing Joy – I mean, you don't really – when's the last time you saw somebody wearing a New Order shirt? But I see Joy Division shirts all the time. But New Order is way bigger than Joy Division. Way bigger.
It's nuts. I guess because, like – yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I guess because a lot more, like, depressing. Maybe. But that, no, I don't know. Anyways.
I think it just goes to show, maybe not now, but then, the power of one radio hit, what that could do for you. Anyways.
Yeah.
This new Mean Jeans spinoff, Funky Punk Space, absolutely fantastic. Let's play some Mean Jeans. Also, Christian is going to be on the podcast, not next week, but the week after. And we're going to talk Funky Punks in Space. We're going to talk about Patsy's Rats. We're going to talk about Mean Jeans. And he's going to hang around for the news. So that'll be week after next week, which will be cool. So let's just play some Mean Jeans. And then we're going to come back and talk about Every Time I Die. And we are back. Every Time I Die. Broke up. Edmore, are you an Every Time I Die fan or not? I forget. I think you are, right?
Yeah, but like more recent. Like,
Are you broken up by this, and are you broken up by the bizarre internal fighting that was made public immediately when the band started to break up?
I was really surprised. It really threw me for a loop. I wasn't expecting it because from everything that I've seen and listened to and, you know, everything, it's like, oh yeah, the band, sure, they might have the odd problem, but you know, they're a band, they'll figure it out. At the end of the day, they love playing music, they love each other. That, well, in one in this case, like, you know, there's literally a pair of brothers, you know, like there's a blood tie there, like,
yeah, they hate each other, right?
Yeah. And it's like, where did this come from? I mean, probably lots of stuff, but it was really surprising because, you know, like, look at them and always thought, like, oh, such a, like, a tight-knit group and whatever. But, you know, the way that this played out was really just awful to see, you know? Just, like, you've been together for, like, 23 years. You've released, like, 9 albums now. The last one, Radical, was absolutely insane. Like, it was so good, and it just... Now it's over, you know what I mean? Like, they had a tour lined up, and that's gone. They had 2 tours lined up. They're both gone. Their Twitter and their Instagram are deleted. They're no longer. Their Facebook and their website are still up, though, so there's still content. But, yeah, like, it's just, it's really sad. Just the, like, the 4... members Jordan Buckley, Andy Williams, Stephen Mishi, and Clayton Goose, Holyoke, releasing the joint statement announcing, like, their departure without Keith Buckley and just saying, like, we don't want anything to do with him. We tried reaching out to him, like, all this kind of stuff. And then Keith Buckley posting the legal document, you know, and the... And then him, like, coming and saying, I tried to communicate with everybody, and that didn't work. And, like, I mean, when your statement begins with, there is absolutely no hate in my heart when I say that whatever is going on with the guys from now on is between them and their God. Any emotional and mental connection I had to them was thoroughly severed when I got that letter, meaning the legal document, on December 20th. Like, that's intense, you know, like, just for...
Yeah, it's very, very emo.
Yeah. It's this has been their whole lives, basically, you know, like, together and music and touring and all this. And then also in, like, Keith Buckley's statement, it's like, oh, the breakup, it was inevitable. We should have broken up in 2014. It's like, what? You know, like, why didn't you? Or, like, what went on? And... He also said, like, he thought things were getting better within the band, and then it just all kind of collapsed. So, you know, like, Radical meant a lot to me, because at the time that it came out and at the time I was listening to it, there were a lot of connections, and there was a lot, it was a rough time, so it did help, and it did, you know, it found me at the right time. But, like, the people who have been fans for, again, like, since the beginning, for 23 years and invested so much in this band, so much, like, meaning and so much emotion, and to have it be, like, so, such a messy fallout, you know, it's like, that must just be beyond heartbreaking, you know, like, how do you pick sides in that case? Like, do you go with the 4? Do you go with Keith Buckley? Or do you disavow everything? Like, what do you do at that point? So, yeah, it does piss me off, though, because it does seem like this all could have been solved if they, like, actually just kind of sat down and talked to each other. Again, I'm sure there's way more to this, but if the line of communication was actually open between everybody, you know, maybe it would have been a bit better. And, you know, sending somebody just like a, hey, here's the separation agreement terms or whatever, you know.
One thing, it's amazing how many bands of brothers, and I don't know if there's a, I don't know, do you know if the sisters in Heart get together or not? I mean, get along, do you know? I don't know.
I'm not sure. No, I'm not sure.
But it's amazing how many bands of brothers like hate each other. The Kinks, I think, don't get along. Amoebics, they hate each other. Well, I don't know if they hate each other, but there's real bad feelings there. The Oasis brothers hate each other. It is interesting that, I mean, I guess when it's your brother, I don't know. I've never had a brother, so I don't know. I couldn't see this happening with me and one of my family members, but maybe it could, you know. What I will say is with the legal letter posted by Buckley from Savour Law, I thought the tone of the letter was probably on its face, it seems like he's trying to write it in a non-combative manner, but the undertones are definitely combative. And I'm not sure that would have been the best thing to do in this scenario, frankly. There's a long history with this band, so maybe that tone was necessary. I think I would have just said, listen, under the band's internal band member agreement, which every band should have, and which – the fact that Every Time I Die have an internal band agreement will save them literal years of litigation. It's sad they're breaking up from their perspective, but they're real happy they got one of those internal band agreements right now, because otherwise it would be a massive fight that would cost everybody hundreds of thousands of dollars for years. Anyways, I don't think I would put threats in the letter. I would just say, here's the deal, bro. The band's breaking up. Give me a call and we'll sort out who gets what. And that's that. I don't think the purpose of these threats seem not to really try to discourage him from doing anything, because it's not like he's going to be discouraged. It's not like most cease and desist letters are just shouting at the wind. Like if you say something in a letter, I'm going to beat you up, unless the person knows what they're doing is wrong and they're hoping to not get caught, if they think they're in the right. And more, if you send a cease and desist letter to someone that thinks they're right, what do you think the response is 99.9% of the time?
No.
Right. It's like, you can't tell me what to do. Now I'm going to do it. And that's exactly what happened here. You know what I mean? So like, we don't know 1% of the history here. So, you know, maybe this letter was necessary. But me, when I do a cease and desist, it's asking for trouble, you know. So it's very rare where someone rolls over and says, you're right, you're stronger than me, don't beat me up. I see people essentially suicide financially instead of just saying, I was wrong, I'll stop. You know what I mean? And so when you write the letter, I'm bigger, I'm better, I'm going to beat you up, it is incredibly rare for someone to say, oh, stop. I'm bigger, I'm better, I'm going to beat you up. What do you think of that? You know, so it's these kinds of letters are rarely effective. The only time they're really effective is if you're someone that is big and bad, like Disney, or even a mid-sized band, and you got some little guy being a jerk, and he knows he's being a jerk, and he's just hoping he won't get caught. That's when a cease and desist works. In scenarios here where you got two bulls, and they both are thinking the biggest, baddest bull in the field, telling one bull, this bull's going to beat you up, he's not going to run away. He's going to be like, I'm going to beat you up, you know, so I don't know.
Right.
Just my perspective, that's all. Anyways, I don't really care about Every Time I Die. So let's see. We are pretty close to wrapping this up. We got just a couple of last stories. I'm going to skip this one story, but maybe I'll talk to Em more about this afterwards. Maybe not.
Sounds good.
Because I got some inside info, and we're just not gonna talk about it. Because I don't want to fire blown back on me. Let's see. Is there a festival here that I've gotten the news? Oh, Punk Rock Bowling 2020 postponed. I'm sad. I already have my hotel book, El Cortez on Fremont Street, my hotel of choice, which I don't get paid to promote, but I love it so much I name it whenever I can. I got to unbook my hotel, free cancellation until the week before, so that's cool. But I'm sad. Punk Rock Bowling 2022 is not going to happen in May. I was hoping it would. At this point, I'm not even sure it's going to happen in fall. It might. I remember when they kicked it back last May, they said, we're going to do it in the fall, but they didn't even say that this time. They said, we're not doing it in May. We don't know what's going to happen. So I'm very sad. I love going to Punk Rock Bowling. I love flying to Vegas. Vegas is a great – if you don't drink, gamble, and whore like me, and you just go to music festivals and buy records, Vegas is a great town, man, and eat tacos. Vegas is a great town, man. Like, for 3 days. I mean, I don't know if I'd want to go out there for a week when there's no music festival, but if you're there for 3 or 4 days in a music festival, Vegas is a great town. And I'm so disappointed I don't get to go to Punk Rock Bowling this May. I don't know, Edmore. You had any other statements? Maybe it's necessary, and maybe we all just got to suck it up. Or maybe this is a little too hair trigger, you know?
Yeah, postpone until further notice sounds pretty ominous, you know? Like, is it COVID?
Right. Well, yeah, I'm sure it does. I'll read the exact quote. We know that some of you are eager to make your PRB arrangements, so we want to let everyone know as soon as possible that, unfortunately, PRB has been postponed until further notice. That's almost like somebody's in trouble. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like meeting in the office.
It's almost like PRB is breaking up with itself. You know, I'm thinking it's got to be COVID. Maybe it's difficult to plan stuff in Vegas, right? Although, isn't it the same exact weekend like Emo Fest 2022 is happening? Or was Emo Fest 2022? So. Let me look that up. When we were young.
All the bands. Because now it's like three nights.
That's October.
Oh, that's October. Oh, that's not too bad.
You want to hear something mind-blowing, Em? And what's cool about – and like I said, you know, punk news is not butted heads, but we've gotten warmer, we've gotten cold with Punk Rock Bowling, even though I still love going. Wow. Yeah. When we were Young Fest, added a third date anyways. And are you going to have your mind blown? Like, when we were Young Fest is run by the same festival organizers that did Astroworld. We were young, it looks like it's like a punk-ish fest, but it's not. Yeah. It's really just like some rich investors – that look at different genres that can make money. Like I'm amazed at how like I don't like any of this music except for The Garden. I love The Garden. I don't care about any other band on this bill at all except The Garden. But like this festival is very well curated for its audience. Oh, I like the Linda Lindas too. This audience is very curated for its audience. I'm amazed that an investor that doesn't care anything about this kind of music at all is so good at targeting its market. It's almost scary. Like, this looks like it's being put on by someone that loves this kind of music, but it's not. It's just some investor that paid someone to make it look that way and select bands based on how to maximize. I mean, this festival is a rich entity that is paying some guy to make it look like this festival is an entity that is paying someone to expertly target a market and figure out how to get money from that target market. That's like really surprising because it's so well done, and it's also scary that it can be that specific. You know what I mean?
Yeah, dude, it's so scummy, you know, like so fast. You know, like it's like they went on a playlist and just like added everything. You know, it's like, oh, this works, that works. And it's probably going to go to pay for like their Astroworld legal stuff.
And you're right, but it's also it's amazing at how well hidden it is. Like you would have no way of knowing. I think the way people found out is there was like permits or something that they looked into or something like that. But like you would, and it makes you wonder like not to be Mr. Paranoid, but like how many things that we check out and pay for are really just some rich entity behind the scenes that realize how to get money out of my wallet without me realizing that's what he's doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How
Starbucks like poses as you know, like corner coffee shops, but it's not.
And would you ever pay $250 for a one-day show?
Is this When We Were Young Fest?
Yeah.
See all the bands, probably.
That's the thing, is it's too many bands in that, like there's at least 50 bands here. There's going to be like a 20-minute set for everybody, you know. Anyways, I don't care about When We Were Young. Although, Ed Moore might, because I got My Chemical Romance.
I do.
You want to go?
Now I know it's by Live Nation, no.
Well, I don't think it's Live Nation. I think it's an entity that is, you know, there's so many entities behind entities. Right. Astroworld, I don't know if that was Live Nation or if just Live Nation directed it but didn't own it. It's like, it's so sketchy.
That's what it was.
At least with punk rock bowling, it's the Stern Brothers. They're making the money. They're selling the product. Well, that's all right. I can deal with that. You know what I mean? Unless there's an investor behind the Stern Brothers, which I don't think there is, but I don't know. But I don't think there is. I have no evidence to suggest that. So it's punk dudes put on a punk fest. That's kind of cool. You know, even if you don't love every aspect of it, that's pretty cool. You know what I mean? Whereas these kinds of things, it's like it's so corporate, but it's masquerading as not corporate. And that's what's scary. And it's very convincing. That's what's scary, you know?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, here's something that's not scary. Classic of Love is finally putting out their EP. They said it was going to come out a while ago, but it's been delayed. The new EP is called World of Burning Hate. It came out in 2019 or 2020, and it is awesome. And it's coming out on Asian Man Records. I wish Mike Park would put a pre-order up now because I would buy it right away, and I don't mind waiting 6 months. And more, are you psyched for the physical version of Classic of Love, World of Burning Hate?
I am. It looks so cool. It looks so cool. It's stuff like this where it's like, I need to get a record player. I need to actually like start doing that. But oh my God, it looks so cool. Because that EP is the best. It is so good. It holds up. And, you know, like Classics of Love seem like awesome people. And Mike Park seems like an awesome person. So, you know, it's great when, you know, like really good people work together to benefit each other. You know, it warms the heart.
It's a great release. I hope they do some live shows. Jesse Michael said he was going to do some live shows. Oh, he did do a house show not that long ago, and it was awesome, I heard. But yeah, so listen, I'm just like, let's play some Classics of Love, and we'll come back, and we'll do just a couple of quick stories and wrap this on up. It's not what you thought. It's not right at all. 30 years old and you're ready to die. A video of his they got taken down. I hope you saw it when you had a chance, listeners. Joey Ramone's band before he was in the Ramones was called Sniper, and a live show was posted and it was kind of New York Dollsy, and everyone hated it, and I thought it wasn't that bad. I thought it was okay. I think I know why it got taken down, but I'm not going to say live on the podcast because I don't want to get sued for defamation. But everyone hated this. They were like, this sucks, you know? I actually thought it was all right. I mean, not great, but I thought it was just fine. What do you think, Anmore? I thought it was cool to see Joey before the Ramones, for sure.
Yeah, that was cool. I wasn't able to watch it because when I went to, it was like, this video is no longer available due to a copyright claim. So I missed it, and now I'm sad that I missed it.
The quality was terrible. The visual was almost completely whacked out, but you could basically hear it, and it sounded like bands trying to be the New York Dolls. It sounded like Joey Ramone trying to be David Johansen and the New York Dolls, and the rest of the band trying to be like the New York Dolls. And it was just kind of cool to hear, you know.
It would be.
So anyways, let's wrap this up with one last story. Psy Warfare have released a live cassette album, and it is called Live at the Cherry Bar, and it's a recording from Australia, and it is strictly noise, no music at all, and I just love that Psy Warfare is Dwayne Hellion of Integrity, just making strictly noise music, and I love saying Psy Warfare, because it sounds like real cool, and it is intense, and I just love how so much of modern punk is, and I don't even mean pop music or pop punk, I mean like, well, like Hot Water Music and those kind of bands, people are like, oh, this is so good. And it's like, this is very gentle. It's very reassuring. There's nothing dangerous here. And then Psy Warfare comes out, and it's like just completely unlistenable noise, which I love in small doses. I just love how extreme it is. I think Psy Warfare is fantastic, and I love how it is damaging. I did get to see Psy Warfare live once, opening for Integrity in Baltimore, the Metro, and it was wild. It was Dwayne just like doing like his noise, and there was a guy wearing like a balaclava, and he had like a wash, you know, there's like, no, he had like a trash can, and he was like, no, one guy had a trash can, and he was just like smacking it with a stick for like 20 minutes, and like another guy had like a cookie sheet or some kind of metal sheet, and he was just like banging it and like jumping on it and like bending it and smashing it and screaming, like just screaming, and it was wild, and it was far out, so... I love art that goes, and you don't listen to it every day, but sometimes you do want to go to the edge of time and just see how long you can last. And so I love art that is as far as it can go. And more, can music get more extreme than Psy Warfare and other noise projects? I can't see how anything can be more extreme than just a noise band. What do you think?
I don't think so. I think noise is pretty extreme because, again, it's just like, there's so much like going on. There's so much like unexpected shit. You know, that happens. You have no idea what you're going to hear. And it's just like, it's pure chaos, you know, like, you know, other like extreme music, like, you know, like some grindcore bands are just like, I'm going to eat your face. And that's it. And it's like, that's not original. And, you know, this is like, you don't have any repetition, you know, you don't have somebody else doing this. You know, each noise project, for the most part, I mean, it like are different and are unique and are, you know, like fingerprints, like they're really cool. So and that show sounds nuts, like that sounds really just the best.
It was rad. And then Integrity comes out and they do the first half of it is Humanity's the Devil, and then a killer set after that. So Integrity rules, man. Anyways, and more, we did it. It was duo style once again. And I think we did a pretty good job. I mean, maybe we should fire Sam and Hallie. What do you think? Maybe now is the time for you and I to usurp the throne in our own June 6th podcast insurrection. What do you think of that?
I'm a shaman hat on, and like the horns are shining.
It's on. the revolution starts now. The revolution will be podcasted, and you can always use a podcast at Punk News, and we'll see you next week.